accession number 26752, Reel 1.
So this is Anke Bergman, Reel 1. And if I could ask you then, Anke, first of all, to tell me something about your life. This would be before the war. Could you tell me when you were born and where you were born?
I was born on the 20th of April, 1917, in a very little place in eastern Bohemia. It's called Třebechovice. If it means that. Well, anyway, I grew up there in a very comfortable circumstances. My father had a factory, leather and leather goods, and we were all right. But there I went to the elementary school, and as there wasn't a high school in this little place, I had to go to the next place which had a high school, which is called Gymnasium in Czech, I mean on the continent, which was 8-year school with Latin and all that and classical education. And I must say it was a most marvelous school if I compare it to any other, but this just happened. And I stayed there in a sort of, it wasn't a boarding school, but I boarded in a pensionnat. So I went to school from the pensionnat, and we were only about 10 miles away from the place I was born. But I wasn't home, and I went home every weekend. And my mother came to visit me during the week, that I am not lonely or something like that.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
That's what I was going to mention. I had two sisters and a brother much older than I. So there really wasn't ever any jealousy, because they were 10, 11, and 13 years older than I was. So they were grown up, and so it was quite marvelous. But there we are. And do I carry on about myself or about my family? So I went to that high school, which had a baccalaureate at the end, which I passed after its 8-year schooling in that school. And then I went to Prague to university and went to the law faculty in 1936. And when Hitler came, he closed all the Czech universities immediately. I was halfway through my course. But I keep on saying that's the only good thing Hitler did for me, because I wasn't all that keen. But anyway, never mind. You can cross that out, but it's the whole truth. Because then I started doing languages, and I did. I had a diploma from university in English and in French, and my German was fluent. So I managed like that. Well, anyway.
Would you be good enough to tell me something about life in Czechoslovakia before the war? What sort of society was it that you were growing up in?
Well, I could really compare it to this country, because you were free to do whatever you fancied, and you can sort of join anywhere you wanted to, and there was no discrimination. I am sure there was anti-Semitism, as there is here, but that's very easily livable with, which I keep on saying, telling everybody, because many Jewish groups whom I spoke to asked me this question, if there was anti-Semitism, or if it was possible to live. And somebody asked me, what sort of childhood or teens did you have? And I said, marvelous. And they expected something quite different. I mean, I didn't suffer any discrimination until Hitler came. Because then you knew who your friends were and who weren't.
Were you at all religious, your family?
No. I mean, my mother went to the synagogue once a year for the high holidays out of sort of piety to her, but she never kept anything, and my father never went, and the factory was open, and our favorite food was pork and always stayed. So, I mean, I didn't come across anything as as I came across here when we first came, because I didn't have a clue about Orthodox Jews or anything like that. And our neighbors across the garden on the other side were very, very Orthodox Jews from Germany. And when I first met them, I thought they were talking Chinese or something. I didn't have a clue what was happening. But well, I heard about it and I sort of tried to accommodate it in my mind because I just didn't understand it. But anyway, I am not going into details because it's quite funny. But never mind, it doesn't belong.
It would seem that your family, you were very assimilated.
Very.
With the Czech.
Absolutely.
The
and I mean, our education was like that and the language was like that. And then suddenly you were told that you are something different, which hurt.
No? You had very good politicians before the war, didn't you? Am I right in thinking, you know, Masaryk
and Beneš and all. And Masaryk sort of was so very Jewish friendly. And not that he sort of stressed it, but he directed the happenings in the Republic. Jewish didn't exist. I mean, that's it. But it exists, of course, anti-Semitism exists everywhere. But you are not. I was not aware of it until Hitler came. And we lived very happily in that tiny place which had about 4,000 inhabitants where I was born. And the place where I went to school had 30,000, but that was a big town. And then I came to Prague, of course, and well. But
yes, when you were in Prague, you know, obviously you were part of the intelligentsia. You were at Charles University.
Charles University.
Yes, which has a very good
very, very good name. Yes,
it?
That's right.
Were there lots of discussions about what was happening in Nazi Germany in the 1930s? Were you aware of something?
Well, I'll tell you something. In the 1930s, I was 19 when I came to Prague. So I was at school from 11 till 19 in Hradec. And for my person, it was totally unimportant what's going on in Germany. My mother was frightened out of her wits for some reason. And but anyway, if I am supposed to talk about my personal feelings, well, that Hitler is in Germany and that he's locking up the Jews, and it was like history or like something which really doesn't concern me at all. That I'm talking about my feelings. Other people may have different feelings. And so I didn't really, well, I didn't. I was young. I liked company. I had boyfriends, and nobody ever talked about politics, really. We went to the cinema and to the theater and to the concert, and life was marvelous. I mean, marvelous. And 1938, I was with a group of people skiing in Austria in March 1938. And we were there when Hitler marched in Austria, into Austria, the Anschluss. Well, we were Czech with Czech passports, so it didn't concern anybody. But there I saw that he really never occupied Austria. They welcomed him with flowers and open arms and shouting, and suddenly the Nazi flags were all over the place, and we just stared, because that was the first eye-opening, really. But it didn't make any difference because we are Czech and nothing can happen to us. If you look at the map, so we are in between all those and nothing can happen to us, which was so short-sighted, like I don't know what. But anyway, we came home, we saw the Anschluss. We didn't see any atrocities yet because we went home as quickly as we could after that, and forgot about Hitler and Austria and our Anschluss and lived our life as if nothing had happened, really. Which is, by then I was 21. And, well, with hindsight, it's quite unimaginable that we didn't take some precautions or do something. Well, anyway, then came Munich, which was dreadful, and then came Hitler in March 39, which was even more dreadful, and then it all started to be, we started to be restricted, and there was curfews, and it started gradually. First they took something and another thing, and you weren't allowed to go to the cinema and to the theater and go to the park and travel on the tram only in the back wagon, not the front one. Well, such little things, pinpricks, really, because nothing really happened.
Did you have to wear the scarf?
Yeah, later on, 1941, when Heydrich came to Czechoslovakia as a protector of Bohemia and Moravia, then the stars were introduced. But if I may say so, I was probably the only Jewish person who didn't mind it at all. And I carried my head high. And when it started, so I had a very nice outfit, a suede leather jacket, and the star fitted on it perfectly. And I went out sort of with my head high, as I said, and I met a friend of mine, or acquaintance, a girl about my age, and she was nearly crawling on the floor. And I said, "Why? Don't let them get you down. So you were a star." So I really didn't feel... So I wore a star. So what? Because at the time, I must stress it, that nothing really was happening. What we went through later. But I must have been the only one. I really don't know anybody who reacted like that.
Was it a shock when the Germans, I suppose first of all it was the Sudeten.
That was after Munich, yes. The Sudeten, and all right, it was dreadful, and we knew with all of Hitler's promises that he doesn't want anything else but the Sudetendeutsche, well, it wasn't true. And we should have known, or many people knew it, because so many people emigrated while it was still possible to go, and with money and all that. But anyway, Hitler came 15th of March 39, and then the panic started. And again, I must be totally mad, but I can tell you the story so we can laugh at it if we want to. I had a valid passport, a valid permission by the Germans to leave the country, a job here in England, and something else. All the permissions were in my possession. I was one of the few lucky, because I was single and no ties, and there were these sort of people who came from this country to Prague to arrange for young people or something to be accepted here. I had a British visa, everything was taken care of, and I kept it so long because I so didn't want to go, and I so couldn't imagine that anything will happen to us until the war started, and then it was over. And it was a very hot day, the 1st of September 39, and we were sort of swimming in the river with some friends of mine, and one of them was a Jewish friend of mine who had the same possibility to go to Australia with all his papers in his hands. And we weren't boyfriend and girlfriend, it was just a friend. And we started kissing each other and embracing how marvelous, we can't go anymore. It was totally mad. But that's what, I just tried to describe it in what sort of illusion we lived or something. I don't know what we thought. But we were lucky that happy that we didn't go. And he ended up on the gallows by the Germans in Prague because they caught him without his star. And, well, by then I wasn't in touch anymore with him, but I know that happened after I had been sent away already. And by then I lived in Prague, and I met my future husband, as I said before, Jewish-German, but he did very well in Prague. He was an architect, and He managed to get from Germany in 1933 when Hitler came, but he's stuck in Prague, you know. Well, it was too easy somehow, and life in Prague was so marvelous for the group of people I know of. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't marvelous for everybody, but I had a most beautiful childhood and girlhood and youth. And
I suppose really you had so much to give up for what was unknown.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Yes, and being young and confident.
And as we, none of us knew, nobody knew. Well, anyway, so I met my future husband, and he had a thriving architect's practice. And you know, the irony of it all, because he looked so very, very German. He was fair and blue-eyed, and the language... Nobody would have said he was Jewish, actually. And he had so many German clients. And I died 100 deaths because they kept on coming to our flat with the Hakenkreuz on. It was, and we still didn't know what we were talking about, but it was unbelievable. But he was with them sort of, they were at home with each other somehow. I don't know how to describe it. He left Germany because of them, but when they came to Prague, well, he knew what he was doing for them, because he built the sort of nightclubs and all the German ones I'm talking about. Well, anyway, we were doing much too well to even consider emigrating, which was still possible then, without everything, but you could still go at that time. And we sort of paid a sort of lip service. We must do something about emigration, and we must, until it was really too late, and that was that.
How about your parents? You were saying how worried your mother was.
Yeah, my mother was worried, but I was the youngest child, so they were old people, elderly. You know, nowadays they were youngsters, but at that time they didn't have the courage probably to start. I knew my father was how old? 39. Oh, he was old. He was 69 in 39. At that time, you didn't start a new lifestyle or something. But my brother and my sisters were sort of in their early 30s. My brother was 33, but unfortunately, he died of all things, of a blood clot on his brain. Nobody heard him. Nothing happened. It just happened. And it was just awful to watch my mother looking at him dying, because it took about a fortnight. No, it was dreadful. But in the end, he probably saved himself an awful lot of... But my two sisters, my eldest sister... Never mind, she didn't have children, but my other sister had a little boy of 7 or 8 or something. And her husband, who saw what was happening, left for England, and he wanted her so much to come with the child, but she felt so much more comfortable at home, in the house, and nothing will happen. That was stupid. But I mean, it's mostly hindsight what I'm describing now, because I didn't act in any other way than she did. Only the marriage wasn't all that good, so she wasn't all that keen to join him. Well, that was that. Well, had she known what was going to... Well, she didn't. So we are now in 1939. I met my husband in November 39, and we got married in May 40.
How were the Czech people, the non-Jewish Czechs, how were they reacting to the situation of Jewish people having to wear scarves and being punished?
Some of them were friendly as before, and some of them didn't know you, but this is just normal. Why risk something for nothing, really, if we weren't all that friendly? But my experience with my friends is the best there can be, the Czech friends. And I think I was one of the very few people who came back afterwards. I didn't have a clue what my parents did with all the things which they're hiding with somebody. I didn't know. I wasn't in that place. I was in Prague. And I got practically everything back, which means, I don't want to brag, but it was a lot of jewelry, valuable jewelry, and Persian carpets, and china, and silver cutlery, and all that. I got it all. I didn't have a clue where it was, and the people came to me and brought it back to me. So I have the best experience in that respect. But at that time, the counselor in that little place where I come from was totally communist, they were all communists, and they treated me something off. Not because I was Jewish, maybe, but because I was from the bourgeois background, and I came back there to stay there for a while in my sister's house, the sister with the child, and I was allocated one room, and no bathroom, and no kitchen. No, I really vegetated there, and that hurt most because I expected this treatment from the Germans, but not from the Czechs. And there was a huge garden around that house which I wasn't allowed to visit and take a tomato from a plant or a strawberry or something. That those 2 months which I spent there were just beyond any description how they treated me. But I am sort of jumping. I will come to this afterwards.
It's understandable because the theme goes on, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, and when I remember this thing and don't remember the other thing, but I'll come back to it because it's very important what I want to say.
Yes, I would like to. I'll remind you if you forget.
All right. So by then it was 1940. In October, Heydrich came and the stars, and in end of November, the first group of only men were sent in two transports to Terezin, sort of to help up to build it up for the future transport which would be coming there. We didn't know where or what, but Terezin was about 40 miles away from Prague, and it was a barracks place where there were only soldiers and the people who served the barracks. It was built in 1780 or something like that by Joseph I in the memory of Maria Theresa, who was his mother. That was the Austrian, Austro-Hungarian, no, not Austro-Hungarian yet, Austrian. And the Bohemia and Moravia belonged to the Austrian Empire at that time. Meaning end of 18th century. And so we knew what Terezin was, and so we are going to Terezin. And there were all the accommodation for the first transports in the barracks. The sexes were separated, and we weren't allowed to walk here and there and everywhere because there was still the non-Jewish population there, and they had to go. So the Germans managed to get them out they brought them back into Bohemia to some other place. It took about 3 to 4 months until Terezin was only for the Jews, and then the Germans had their offices and houses there, but there was a barbed wire drawn where we shouldn't go and all that. But it didn't matter because at that time we were allowed to walk within that small limit. But one can get used to everything, and really nobody did anything to us, except when we arrived in Terezin, my husband, end of November, and I on the 14th of December, 41. And within a month, there were hangings of people who wanted or did smuggle a letter to their parents or whatever for no good reason. I thought about 14 people were hanged because they wanted to frighten us, to make us aware that it's no sort of no joke, all that. I don't know that this is my idea, but I can't imagine why they did it. because we were locked up there and we sort of coped as well as we could, and they wanted work from us, which we did, and everybody obeyed, and everybody was afraid of the Germans, but not enough, probably. And these 16 young men who were hanged, it was awful. That was really the first proper shock for me.
Were you forced to watch that?
No. Not I, anyway, but I don't think anybody was there except the council, the Jewish council, and the SS, and whoever, well, the hangman that I don't know.
Well, when you left for Terezin, and you say it was in December, in December, what were you allowed to take with you?
50 kilos of something. So, well, I mean, you don't know what to pack, do you? But if you want to hear this stupid noise, if I talk about it, I don't believe it. Because my husband was very... don't put it in it. It's so stupid. I just want to illustrate my state of mind. He loved donuts, my husband. And so I had somebody who helped me at home, and this lady could make the most beautiful donuts I have ever eaten. And I carried a square box of donuts with me instead of packing a sweater or something. All right, so I carried it extra off my case, and we were gathered in some sort of warehouse in one part of Prague, where we were for 3 days without any facilities, really. I mean, there were some loose somewhere, but we were without mattresses or anything on the... It didn't matter, because, again, some of the people who... We were about 1,000 people there, and they came to me after. I didn't know them, but they said that I stuck out like a sore thumb because I did my eyelashes every morning to be... I was as dirty as can be sitting on the floor, but I did my eyelashes, right. This is just to illustrate, whatever. And we came to Terezin, and we...
How
were...
How did you get there? Did you
By train. We had to walk from this place where we were congregated about... It was about... No, not very far, about 200 yards, let's say, 300 to the station. But we had to carry various things, and I had to carry this box with those blinking donuts. And I really couldn't, because it was so awkward. And at that time we still didn't know what was in store for us, because a friend of mine said to the SS man if she could help me to carry it. And he said something terribly rude in German. It really doesn't matter to whom, but he said it in a very different language. If the donuts or if the box comes with us or not, he was right. But I got it to Terezin, however many donuts.